Okay, well, this is my podcast. I guess I should start with saying my name and then the name of the podcast. So, as tacky as this sounds, my name is Adela Leah Viola Scotland. I am 17 years old. I live in Trinidad and Tobago, and I decided to start a podcast called Color Your Life. And basically, I am going to be talking about great people who graced this earth before you and me and really left a dynamic impact on it. But because of, you know, the color of their skin or their gender, we don't take time to really appreciate the magnitude of the sacrifices that they made. And I would like to do that. So I did two things. One, I wrote a book called The Evolutionary Art of Life. I'm still working out publication details and stuff like that, and well, finishing my final edits, but that's the thing that is going to be happening definitely within the foreseeable future. And one of the things I discussed in the book was, like I said, great people that came before us and really changed the world. And these people were, you know, African, they were Indian, they were Asian, they were Pacific Islanders, you know, just people who did great things, but because of the agenda of, you know, white supremacy and, you know, the whitewashing of the Caribbean education system, which is a topic that I am always very vocal about. You know, our youth doesn't get exposed to these people. And that's something that I wanted to do. Now, bear with me, this is my first podcast. The only part of it that is scripted is the spoken word piece that I'm going to give at the end. But everything else is just me talking, because I tried a script and that didn't work out too much. So if I make grammatical errors or pause and awkward stuff like that, I'm trying to find my vibe, you know, my rhythm, my soul. But right, back to what I was saying. And in the book, the main character, Violet Blue, she speaks about these people in a blog she has called Color Your Life. Initially, I was going to write the blog myself, but I actually tried writing a blog in around 2018, I think. Epic failure. I think it's still out there. You could check it out at Deese, that is D-E-S-E, Scotland Nuts. Yes, I wrote a blog called Deese Scotland Nuts. And it's basically just about, you know, the journey through life and finding your heart and your soul. Yeah, as you get to know me, you'd realize that I'm actually really, I'm quirky. Yeah, I think we could use quirky to describe me. You know, my friends are always like bewildered by the fact that I could turn anything into a song effortlessly, really, really quickly, and I go on and on and on and on and on about it, and I come up with these ideas or these characters and stereotypes and all sorts of weird things, and I just elaborate on it, and I make people laugh, and I make people happy, and that's one of my missions in life. I want to make people happy. And while coming to the end, I would tell you about my writing pages, because like I said, I do have a spoken word piece that I prepared and will be hopefully said really good and really cool at the end of the episode, because this is my second time doing spoken word, but the first time can't remember what the competition was. I just know it was for a feminist movement in Trinidad. I was really nervous, wasn't going to enter. Like, 11 p.m., the day of the deadline, I was like, screw it. Let me write my piece. Let me record my piece. And I came in third place. So I guess that was good. But if you ask me, I mean, the content was good. The delivery. Alright, so let me tell you a bit about today's episode. So, since I learned about Christopher Columbus, which was a really long time ago, I never liked the guy. I always put out the question, if the Amerindians were here before and they most definitely entered the Caribbean from the Orinoco River from Venezuela, how could Christopher Columbus have discovered the New World? And my classmates and stuff used to, you know, just tell me that, you know, I'm overthinking it too much. Columbus discovered it, you know. I would ask my teachers, they would tell me the same thing. But what I'm really grateful for is my family, you know, my parents, from a really young age when I asked them questions. And oh boy, did I ask a lot of questions. You know, they wouldn't lie to me or sugarcoat it. They would tell me the raw truth. So they told me the raw truth about Christopher Columbus. From a very young age, I was aware of the mass genocide that he inflicted upon the natives of the Caribbean. And that's really important to me because I think my mom told me my great-grandmother and on her mom's side, was a Carib from Tobago. And my dad, on his mom's side of the family, we are descendants of the Garifuna, which is something I'm super proud of because the Garifuna were these really vicious, really strong, really powerful tribe of Caribs who lived in like St. Vincent. And when Columbus came, they actually fled to, I believe it was like Belize and Guyana and these other places. And when the Africans came as slaves and they moved into the mountains as Maroons, they coexisted with this tribe. And that's where we have Black Caribs. I am a descendant of Carib on both sides of my parenthood. Don't know if that's the right word. So, you know, and I'm actually really grateful because, fun fact, in Trinidad, actually, when Columbus came and, you know, him and those after him tried to set up the encomienda system and take over the lands and all of that, they were unsuccessful because of the Mucarapo Indians and other people. The name of the guy just slipped my mind. Oh my gosh, why can't Hayarima? Right, Hayarima, the guy that Arima is actually named after, and there's a statue of him and everything. People like him defended our country against the Spanish invaders, and I actually had the scary yet good opportunity to witness a ritual in 2016 where at a crossroad you chant some indigenous chant in the Carib language, and you pour alcohol onto the ground, and then you take a sip of some and you goggle it in your mouth and you spit it out and you continue chanting in a circle, and that is supposed to allow you to communicate with a spirit. The rain fell, so we all fled back inside of the maxi, but you know, that was, at the time, I was really like, oh my gosh, this is witchcraft, this is Obia, what? But now that I'm older and I'm more inclined with my culture, I am really grateful to have had that opportunity to see a ritual being performed in front of my eyes. But anyways, yeah, the Caribs of Trinidad actually fended off the Spanish invaders, and that is why we were one of the last islands to become colonized. I think they only really got here in the 18th century, so I'm proud to be a Trini, even though, crap, right? That's another thing I should say. If you, you know, we could ask your parents, we could ask your friends, a lot of the citizens of Trinidad actually aren't, their ancestry doesn't trace back from Trinidad because of how late we were colonized. Because I just remembered, my dad's side, I think everyone came from St. Vincent, and on my mom's side, people came directly from both Africa and Barbados, and actually went to Tobago, and then eventually they made their way over here. And well, there are a lot of other things that I will be telling you later on in the podcast about, you know, my ancestry, like what I know, but you know, that's not the main focus of today's episode. Today we're gonna talk about Cristoforo Colombo. I think that's his Italian Genovian name or whatever. So you know what, first let's get some information on Christopher Columbus. Let me get my Google out because I don't like this man. So I mean I know the year that he died off the top of my head, 1506, I think. Shoot, was it 1509? Okay, I don't, because you know, this guy was just a serious word that I cannot say, even though I want to say it. So oh my gosh, I was right, he did die in 1506. So let's go to the good old Google-o for some basic info on Christopher Columbus. So he was born in 1451 in Genova, Italy, and he died on May the 20th, 1506, in Valladolid, okay, let's go with that pronunciation, could be wrong, in Spain. And oh my gosh, he wasn't buried until 1898. I wonder why that is. And his spouse was Filippa Moniz Perestrello, and he had two children, Diego Columbus and Ferdinand Columbus. So some context. Now I'm saying all of this from the top of my head. You know, I'm a history student. No, let's use the truth. I am an aspiring history student who would like to be very versatile in the knowledge of the past, and I long to be a scholar, but I ain't even close. Alright. So, the Portuguese. Now, Portugal and Spain are connected. And basically, you know, the Moors had a monopoly on Spain during, you know, I think it was like basically the formation of Spain up until the 15th century, that's for sure, because there was a strip of land. For God's sake, I can't remember the name of it right now. It began with a C. Shoot, my history teacher would be very disappointed in me, especially since I have a cape in less than a month. Yeah. And this border was close to the ocean and was a very strategic and instrumental area in terms of trade, as well as just the whole monopoly for power. And in Africa, you know, with the transatlantic, with the trans-Saharan trade, you know, the Muslims who were the Moors, and they had a monopoly over the trade. And if you wanted to get goods from the Middle East to any other part of Africa, you had to go through their territory and they would tax you. And well, the entirety of Europe were like, nah, but the Portuguese were really the first to start to explore Africa so that they could get a monopoly on the trade and bask in the glory of African riches. As well as along the way, they were like, yo, let's find Prester John, which is the place where Jesus is allegedly buried. All of this was thanks to Henry the Navigator, who set up navigation schools in Portugal, and he funded various naval expeditions to explore the coast of Africa, and they went to like the Canary Islands, the Azores, Cape Verde Islands. They explored a good portion of West and South Africa within the 14th century, and well, in these schools, I think Christopher Columbus actually attended one of the schools, and this is actually something that I found really good In the initial stages of Portuguese and African contact, it was actually a mutual, or even better, a symbiotic relationship. African scholars came to Portugal to teach at these schools because, let me tell you about my homeland, Africa. Those people were smarter than Europeans at the time, you know, and they had advanced knowledge of the sea, of the wind, basically everything you needed to know about sailing and astrology. So Henry the Navigator invited them there to talk at the schools and be the lecturers and the teachers, etc. So, you know, Columbus, I think he was like a glovemaker before this, so he was born the son of a glovemaker. Anyways, Columbus eventually decided that he was going to join the Portuguese exploration of Africa, and he sailed across the African coast, you know, seeing like everything. If you guys like, I can do an episode on early Portuguese contact with West Africa. That's actually one of my favorite topics in history, because it was really good to see the diplomacy between Portugal and Africa before they got the big idea of the transatlantic slave trade. Elmina! But let's not get into that. Anyways, right, so after this, now Columbus approached the Portuguese king and he was like, yo, you know, we wanna, you know, get to the east to get, like, you know, spices from the east and, like, things from the east, but we don't really wanna go through the Moors, you know, like that land route and all the taxes, and then, oh my gosh, it takes so long! But, you know, the king, oh, big thing! Right. So, because of people like Plato and other ancient scholars who believed that the earth was round, and Africans also believed the earth was round, in Columbus's education, he got taught that the earth was round. And, you know, this is why he postulated this belief to the Portuguese king. But, you know, I think it was King John at the time. He was like, no, son, I'm sorry. So that's when he went to Spain, and King Ferdinand and Queen Isabella were more than happy to take the risk and embark on this endeavor. So, you know, Christopher Columbus sailed the Asian Blue. Wow, I can't believe I butchered that. Christopher Columbus sailed the Ocean Blue in 1492. And, you know, he got off on the Santa Maria, the Pinta, and the Nina. You know, when he first arrived in the Caribbean, he discovered San Salvador first, which is early day. Oh, shoot, why am I? Which is modern day Bahamas. You know, when he got to Hispaniola, he set up a settlement. Things were going good. He made two more voyages, discovered, like, yeah, the entire Caribbean and that of the Americas. You know, set up settlements in some places, did it in other places, and as we have seen, the settlement in Hispaniola, I think they named it after, oh my gosh, okay guys, like, my brain is kind of dead right now, but yeah, you know, the settlement in Hispaniola didn't really work out that well. Didn't. The natives were intrigued by Columbus. They thought that he was God, and since, you know, Columbus came in search of God, golden glory, God being to convert these pagan Indians to Christianity, gold being to be rich, and glory to return home to, well, not really home, to return to Spain with like a lot of money and a lot of tributes for the king and queen, and got like a hell of a lot of famous, like, all right, that's like, that's 15th century influencers right there. Oh wow. But well, Columbus actually didn't know that he discovered a new world. At the time, he thought that he was just in like India. That's why we have to name the West Indies, actually. And anyways, you know, I think he got shipwrecked in Hispaniola. That's how they ended up having the settlement. He made an alliance with the chief at the time, and you know, men, how they are. And, you know, they started raping the woman. And, well, misogynation, that's how we had mestizos being born. And, you know, like, their pigs wreaked havoc on the ecosystem. Let me just tell you that, because it had a complete disruption in the equilibrium of the food chain, and then pigs are just real nasty, oh, so that wasn't really good either. And, well, basically, first they had the repartimiento laws, where basically the Spanish had to convert the natives to Christianity, and the natives had to pay, yeah, they had to pay the Spaniards to stay on their native land, which does not make any sense. Because let me tell you something. In the Greater Antilles, we had the Taino living, and the Taino, though not very versatile in literacy, were very versatile in their culture. They had very structured systems of government, with the head being the... Gosh, what is wrong with my brain today? With the head being the Nataina. Oh shoot, I'm about to say Nataina, but that definitely was not the head. The Nataino were the heads of the family. Let me take a walk of shame and open up my history book and tell you guys who were the head. The cacique! Great, the cacique. Woo! Would you believe that last week I thought that I memorized module 1? Apparently I didn't. The cacique, right? You know, they had their heads. They had religion with their demigods who represented different aspects of their life. They had religious rituals, religious festivals. They had a creation story with Damien, the turtle woman, I believe. They loved their turtles. They really did. You know, they had crop systems. They were very eco-friendly, environmentally conscious. You know, they were their own people with their own complex culture and civilization, even if it was different to that of Europe at the time. I don't like when people use the word primitive. They were not primitive. They were just different. Just because you know one way of life doesn't mean it is the superior way of life or the right way of life. It is just your way of life. So I'm not going to be using primitive peoples. I will refer to them either as natives or by their name. But they were very peaceful. They didn't like war. In fact, they didn't even have weapons. The only tools they had would have been for hunting, which was something that they didn't even do frequently because they basically survived on the crops that they grew, and they had subsistence crops in their backyards, and they had like little dogs that they would eat, barkless dogs. They would easily catch fish with their fishing traps and turtles, you know. So they didn't really have a need to hunt, and since they were peaceful, they didn't have weapons. So they were really easy for Columbus and his dudes to kill with, you know, guns, swords, their war dogs, and horses. And of course, you know, the raping of the woman and having, you know, a new... They created an entire new... Yeah, they created an entire new race. You know, the mestizos. And then on top of that, they forced them to give up their religion, their most important part of their existence, to adopt something that was foreign to them, something that they did not and probably would never have been able to understand because they're so different. We could even start with the fact that they were polytheistic and Christianity is monotheistic, and that just wasn't right, and it wasn't fair, you know. And then, you know, they started the encomienda system, which is where they had to provide labor for the Spaniards, you know, help them search for gold so that Columbus could take it back to Spain. And if they didn't do what the encomiendero, who basically was the person who lived on their land, collected taxes from them, you know, had them working their butts off to please him, you know, if you didn't pay your taxes, gonna be dead. And then, you know, the mining that they had to do is really dangerous because tools weren't advanced then. And they actually used to tie them to vines and plunge them into the ocean and make them dive for pearls. That was also very dangerous. And then, you know, getting blown up in the mines was dangerous. If you couldn't pay your taxes on time, you're gonna get killed, you know? Your wife is getting raped every night, you know? And then on top of all of that, because the Spaniards disrupted their way of life, their crop system started failing, and they started becoming really malnourished, and all these factors is what contributed to their death. Basically, the entire Taino civilization was actually wiped out within the space of one generation. You know, other groups like the Caribs and the other indigenous groups, their names are ridiculously complicated and I cannot pronounce them, but, you know, well, the Caribs definitely survived, and other groups of Arawaks, because Caribs and Arawaks are the name of the groups, they're the name of the languages that they spoke. The Kalinagos are a Carib group, and the Tainos are an Arawakan group. Right, that's something that people actually get confused. And there were several other groups besides the Kalinagos and the Tainos. I think I read about the Talipa, you know, and there were others who lived in Hispaniola alone. So yeah, that's basically what Christopher Columbus did. He came to the Caribbean, he put in place the Repartimiento, gosh, I hope I pronounced it right, system, where he, you know, forced the indigenous people to convert to Christianity. If not, they would die. And then afterwards, he took it a step further with the encomienda system, where the natives had to work for the Spaniards and get gold. And, well, when Columbus realized, oof, the Caribbean ain't that rich in terms of gold, but they're rich in terms of soil, that's where the plantation slavery began. But the few Amerindians that there were left, you know, basically died out really, really quickly. But by this time, you know, Columbus got arrested, I think, for committing treason because he wanted to become like the governor general of the New World without Spain being involved. Some hillbilly drama like that, and he died in prison in 1506. And throughout this entire process of the encomienda system with the native peoples, we had a lot of missionaries coming down. We had, as I learned today, weirdly enough, we had the Dominican Friars, the let me get the names of the other groups. I think it was, let's go to my Google history. Oh my gosh, I'm gonna ask a dumb question. How to see your Google history? Okay, I can't get the names of the others right now, but definitely the Dominican Friars, who, they were actually the first people to speak up against the violence that the Spanish were inflicted on the Caribbean native people, with pioneers such as the Jesuit missionaries and the Franciscan missionaries. But anyways, the Dominican Friars were the first people to speak up against the violence being imposed upon the native peoples by the Spaniards. And they had people who started the movement were Antonio de Montesinos, Pedro de Cordoba, and the infamous Bartholomew de las Casas, who prolifically recorded this moment where the Spanish were hanging native people who refused to convert to Christianity. And you know, they asked them, you know, why wouldn't you convert to Christianity? And the Amerindian said something very powerful. I can't remember the exact words, but it was something along the lines of this. If your God is real, and what you say about your God is true, I will not accept your religion, because I'd rather be in hell than be in heaven with the people that have done this to my people. Now, that is so powerful and so inspiring and so brave. I really, really love that. You know, this man or woman rather die and live in hell than accept Christianity simply because of the evilness and brutality of the Spaniards. I just saw the time. It's half an hour, yo. I don't want to bore people or anything. And I feel like 45 minutes is like a good length of time for the podcast. So, you guys could ask me more questions about Christopher Columbus. I would be very happy to go and get the answers for you. You know, I will, I guess on the cover page thingy, I'll link my Insta, my YouTube, and like whatever other social media I decide to set up. Now time for the spoken word piece, which is about, it's entitled The Truth about Christopher Columbus, and it's basically me talking about all the people who came to the Caribbean before Christopher Columbus did, and why it is so, it's like, I don't even understand how you could still here in 2020 be telling me that Christopher Columbus discovered the New World. That shit has been erased from every single form of written and recorded documentation by now, because it is not the truth. There is absolutely no reason to be still celebrating Columbus Day, to still have statues of him around the world. He was nothing but a liar, a con artist, and a thief, and a murderer. Alright. Okay. Let us get into my spoken word. I'ma try my best not to stumble and fall. I practiced this like a million times. So let's see if my beats gonna be popping. Okay, so it's called The Truth About Christopher Columbus by Adela Scotland. Time for the truth about Christopher Columbus, the guy who Europeans claimed discovered us. But now it's time for the truth. The guy was nothing but a skunk ass brute. But before we get into that, let me tell you what we know as a fact. Between 30 to 15,000 years ago, the world froze over and the Bering Strait connected the globe. People migrated from Siberia to Alaska and formed civilizations that lasted here. Hence, this is instance number one. Columbus definitely wasn't the first one to make the journey across the globe. He was just a guy who murdered a lot of natives, yo. Next up is Vancetimus Thesis. For this, we have to take a trip to Egypt. Whilst the Nubian civilization was powerful and strong, they knew about the Caribbean all along. Way back then, in 900 to 800 BCE, these smart, dexterous Africans had boats that could sail the sea. What they didn't know was that there was a current that could take you from Africa and plant you in America. Proof? Yeah, I got it. Well, more like the Olmecs got it. They worship gods. Black gods. Practice Nubian sacredity. Two dogs. Had magnificent stone heads with broad lips and noses and very detailed styling of the African cornrow. It's impossible not to see the blackness in those heads, you know? Also, they had similar folklore. Like the Nubians, the color purple they did adore. And they had an obsession with the human phallus, and used different human hybrid drawings like the Nubians so they could tell us. That's solid evidence that the Nubians made it here and made some friends. The Olmecs in Mexico were a completely different group, so their adaptation of African culture comes from a simple truth. They had contact. Our brothers came through. Now let's look at Abu Bakr II of Mali, the richest empire in all of history. While the Europeans were dying of the plague, the land was thriving. To behold Timbuktu, worldly scholars were dying. He went on a trip, only he didn't return from that trip. He got shipwrecked. At least that's what historians think. But what we do know, with luck on its brink, one of the 2,000 ships got into the New World think. Spanish conquistadors Balboa's records of the New World in the 1500s have records of people, black, black, black. Only in Africa you get beauty like that. The natives told them of people who came. People who came and didn't kill in Christianity's name. They settled in. They absorbed into society. That's written proof there. Columbus can't fool me. Now, for what Columbus did do. After setting sail in 1492, he committed mass genocide of the natives of the Caribbean. He successfully wiped out an entire civilization. The poor Taino were so peaceful and defenseless. So now there aren't any descendants left. After one group, he went to the next. And Kumiana in your tail, or he'll have your necks. He and his friends raped, they stole, they fractured an entire world, enslaved, depraved, dehumanized an entire race. Don't believe me? Just read some Bartholomew de las Casas. Now, I can go on, but do your part and end the storm. Learn the truth, not what white supremacy feeds, and create an honest world for you and me. Alright, considering the fact that I have a very strong, potent, and terrible lisp, I think I was an okay read. You know, as I do this more frequently and I get, you know, the hang of it and the vibe, I'ma be spitting some verses. Alright. So anyways, that was my segment on Christopher Columbus. I really hope you enjoy it. If you were interested in reading more pieces from me, hope you didn't hear that burp, excuse me. there is this app/website called Meraki, as well as this app called Writeco. And my username is Lilacs and Roses. It's one word, Lilacs, LilacsAndRoses, Lilacs and Roses. And I just have short stories and quotes and poems on these two apps, and my Instagram, which is @infinite_Adela. You can see my photography work, some other quotes and poems, hopefully this podcast. You know, hopefully I figure out how to get this thing up on YouTube as well. And thanks so much for listening all the way through to the end. I'm gonna get a guest on for next week, most likely just one of my friends. And the topic for next week, well, first I'm gonna see, you know, what other crisis is gonna happen in the world. If no other detrimental crisis, like the surge of, actually, I don't want to say surge, no, that is not the right word. More like just the latest events of police brutality in America, you know, which are rightfully so angering people. I'll see what the movement is trying to advocate against next, because, you know, this right now, a lot of people are furious about Juneteenth, which is what inspired the Christopher Columbus piece. But actually, you know, I think I might do Alexander Hamilton, because I really love Hamilton. Yeah. So stay tuned, we'll see what happens next week. You know, you're gonna get a nice little history lesson, and then it's gonna be followed up by a nice little spoken word piece, or who knows, maybe I'm gonna do a skit or like a song. Yeah, but anyways, thank you so much. Have a great day, have a great night, have a great morning, whatever, and be sure to color your life.